Would you turn to Deuteronomy chapter 6 for a few verses? Deuteronomy chapter 6. I'll read verses 4 through 7. And then while you're finding that, also turn to Deuteronomy chapter 22. First of all, Deuteronomy 6, verse 4. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord, and thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thine heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy might. That's the commandment that Jesus quoted, recorded in Mark, that we talked about this morning. And these words which I command thee this day shall be in thine heart. And thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children, and shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. And then over to Deuteronomy chapter 22, 1 verse, verse 8. When thou buildest a new house, then thou shalt make a battlement for thy roof, that thou bring not blood upon thine house, if any man fall from thence. Tonight we're talking about the most important piece of furniture in the home. Now maybe you're naming some things over in your own mind. It is not the table off which you eat your food. It is not the bed in which you sleep. It's not the TV set that you watch perhaps hour after hour. All of these things are important, but none of them are essential. There are many people that eat without sitting at a table. Some of us sit too long at the table. We can tell that by looking. Not everybody sleeps in a bed. Realize that probably the majority of people in the world have never slept in a bed like you and I sleep in here in America. And probably a few of us spend too much time in bed. And a lot of the world gets along without television. Some of you do. And we are bound to spend too much time before the television. So while these may be important to us, they're not the most important piece of furniture in the home. What I'm talking about is not something that's actually made of wood or of metal or plastic or other perishable or tangible material. Yet it's to be found in many Christian homes represented here this evening. Not to be found probably in the homes of the unsaved, maybe a few, but not very many. I'm talking about the family altar, otherwise known as family worship or family devotions. I was listening to a tape of a preacher who was preaching at a camp. And he said one day after he had preached on the family altar, somebody came up to him and said, "Can I buy one of these in the camp store? I'd like to get one." No, they're not to be found in any store. Can't buy them anywhere. You've got to build them yourself if you're going to have one. You can't use somebody else's. Each family has to have its own. Now, what is the family altar? Well, it's very simply the family together with God. And that's a wonderful thing when you stop to think about it. And get a whole family. Some families are small. Some families are made up maybe of just a single person. Other families have many members. But the family together with God. And that's what a family altar is. Now, it's not something that's made out of some carved wood and overlaid with the velvet and maybe some gold on it and maybe a picture of Christ over it with a candle burning on each end. It's not anything like that at all. It's to be found in the kitchen in some homes. In other homes, it might be in the den or the living room or even in the bedroom. The family members may take different positions while observing family devotions, having family worship. Some may sit, some may kneel. I know oftentimes children may lay out flat on the floor while dad's reading the Bible and praying. So the position of the body can take different forms. At some family altars, they're singing. At others, there are testimonies of answered prayer. Prayer requests are usually given. The Bible or some devotional book is used, reading from the Bible or from the book. And one or more of the family members then pray. It can last just a few minutes. It can last 5 minutes. It can last 10 minutes. It can last an hour, although I wouldn't recommend that. Remember a young lady coming to me a number of years ago who was a senior in college. She said, I go to school all day and then I work all evening and I get home about 9 o'clock and I have all my studies to do. And my dad says, we got to have family worship. And it lasts for an hour. By the time the hour is up, I am exhausted, not only from that, but I'm exhausted from the whole day. And yet I have to go and do my studies. So it's not the length of it that is really important. It is the fact that we have it, that it's there, that it takes place. It can be at morning, it can be at noon, it could be at night, it could be at midnight if that's the best time. I know when we started family altar at the beginning of our marriage, we tried different times of the day. We tried in the morning, at breakfast time, we tried at each meal. We found out that the best time for us is before we go to bed at night. Now, that's not the best time physically, but that was the time that we were most apt to get together and pray and have our family worship. Sometimes even as I prayed, I fell asleep. I don't like to admit that, but I've done that. So I say it's not the best time for the body, but it was the time that we found that we could do it. Years ago, when our children were very small, I was supplying in a little church over in Spartanburg. And one Saturday night, I was leading Bobby in prayer. And I said, Lord, help some folks to get killed over in Spartanburg tomorrow. And she said, what did you say? And she interrupted my talking to God. I said, help some folks to get killed over in Spartanburg tomorrow. And as I remember, she said, you don't mean that. And I said, oh, no, I mean, help some folks to get saved in Spartanburg tomorrow. But I wasn't too alert. I wasn't too wide awake. So that is not the ideal time from a physical standpoint. But that's the time that we've done it over the 50 years of our marriage. So when it is, where it is, how long it is, and what is in it are all important. But the most important thing about the family altar is that we have one, that we do involve the family in worship and in devotion before the Lord. Now, who's responsible in the home for having it happen? Well, since God has given to Dad the place of spiritual leadership in the family, since that's his design for the home and family, then it is Dad's opportunity and Dad's responsibility to see that the family does get together and have this time of family worship. But what if a dad won't do it? Even some Christian fathers seemingly just can't be bothered with it. They don't take it very seriously. Then it's fine, I think, for the mother to seek the father's approval of it, helping him to realize that, yes, it's what he ought to be doing. But if he doesn't see the value of it, or he says he just doesn't have the time to do it, then the mother asking the father, is it all right if I go ahead and lead the family, lead the children in a time of Bible reading and prayer? Maybe neither parent will do it. Then I think it's okay for a son or a daughter to ask the parents if it's all right if they see that family worship is held, if they get the family together. Now, in some homes we have single parents, and there'll only be one parent responsible. Maybe it's a single person. You are your family. If you're a single person living alone, you are your family. And then you need to have what we would otherwise call private devotions, a private quiet time alone with God. But there has to be somebody that will see that it's done, or it won't happen. It won't happen by itself. There are many benefits in having a family altar. For one thing, it provides a time for the family to be together. And that could be a very rare occasion for many families in this day in which we live, for the nuclear family. Families are running in all directions. I've had families tell me, or parents tell me, We never sit down to the table and eat together. We never get together as a family and eat. We just don't have time together as a family. So that's why I say it's going to take working to do it. And it may take some rearranging of some things, changing some priorities, changing some activities if the family is going to get together. But the family ought to be together. I mean, it ought to be together at least once every day. And so if you have the family worship, it will be an opportunity for the family to come together. It may not be possible to get all the family together. When children are small, you can do it. But as the children grow into teens, they have their own schedules. Maybe they have extra things at school or they work somewhere. So what we did is our children were in the teenage years. Whoever happened to be at home at bedtime got together. Sometimes it would be my wife and me and one of the children, maybe two of them. Sometimes it might be just a couple of the children getting together. So while there were times when we all didn't get together, some of us did. And we did that through the years that our children were growing up. So it's very much needed for families to be together, to have some togetherness. And the family altar provides that opportunity. It shows your children that God is important. Now, there are other ways in which we show that God is important, too. But this is one way. If we meet with God every day, if we give some time to the Word of God as a family, if we give some time to prayer as a family, it gives a testimony to our family that, yes, God is important. We are meeting with Him. We are setting aside some time. We are taking some time out of our regular schedule that we might meet with one another and meet with God. And my how it needs to be impressed upon our children that God truly is important and that He deserves time in our lives on a daily basis. It helps us to fulfill the responsibility of teaching God's word to the family. Back here in Deuteronomy chapter 6, talks about the words of God. And thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children, and shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. It's a wonderful opportunity for a parent to teach child the Word of God. You know what many of us are inclined to do that are in fundamental churches and have our children in Christian schools? We're inclined to put too much of that teaching of the Bible of our children off on the church and on the school. And I have to admit that I did that. I believe I put too much responsibility upon the school and upon the church. They do learn in the Christian school, and they do learn in the church. And that's why we want to have them in a church where the Bible is taught, and want to have them in a school, if at all possible, where the Bible is a part of the textbooks in the school. But the main teaching of the children in the family has been given by God to the parents. And so as we come together for the family altar, for family worship, we're fulfilling part of that responsibility that God has given to parents as the leaders in the family. And a very practical thing, it teaches your children to pray before others. Many folks grow up, Christians grow up, they never prayed aloud before anybody. And I've had people in this church in years gone by, hasn't happened in recent years that I can recall. But in years that are past, I've asked some of the men, would you lead in prayer tonight? And they would answer me, I've never prayed before anybody. I've never prayed aloud. I'm afraid I couldn't do it. Or I've tried to do it and I just get a lump in my throat and I'm unable to say the words. But just like a lot of things, if children begin to do it early in life, then it's going to be a natural thing for them to do it later on in life when they're grown. So you're teaching your children to not be so timid that they cannot pray before anybody else. Of course, we're praying to God. We're not praying to other people, but we know other people are present. And oftentimes we're afraid we'll say the wrong thing or that we won't be able to say anything at all, or we'll get mixed up in what we're saying. But God knows the heart, and first of all, our prayers to Him. But it's good for our children to learn to pray when they're children, to pray aloud. And if you give the opportunity for children to pray at the family altar, that will become something very natural for them. The family altar has a cleansing effect upon the family. We sometimes learn a marriage is breaking up. We will say to ourselves, that just happened overnight. They seem to be such a happy couple. That seemed to be such a great match there. And how could it happen? It just happened all of a sudden. No, marriages don't break up all of a sudden. It goes on for a period of time. Sometimes it may go on for years before the explosion comes. But you know, it's very, very difficult to meet with your mate, to meet with your children, to read the Bible and pray, and be at odds with one another. So if you don't carry your little difficulties, we're going to have hurt feelings. We're going to have misunderstandings. If we don't carry them over from one day to the other, they're not going to fester and grow. Those hurts, those misunderstandings can be like a sore. And if a sore in a body is not taken care of, it festers and it begins to pain, and it can become very, very detrimental to our well-being. And so the little things in our families, if we let them go on from one day to the next, suppose you and your mate have a little falling out one day, and I'm thinking primarily of men now, but your wife gives you the silent treatment. You've hurt her feelings. You shouldn't have done it, but you did. And so she won't talk to you. You try to talk to her, and she's just quiet. You come to bedtime, and you go to bed. You're way over on the one side about to fall off. She's way over on the other side about to fall off. You don't kiss one another goodnight. You don't even say goodnight to one another. She's still silent. She gets up in the morning, and it continues. And it may go on for a few days before she gets over with it. And in the meantime, something else may come along that hurts her. You may hurt her in another way. And it gets worse and worse, and so it foments. And after a while, there's real trouble. But if you have this time to get together before God and with one another, I say it's very, very difficult to read the Bible together and to pray together out of your heart and be at odds with one another. And so those little things will be taken care of. And I think that's one of the great and wonderful advantages of having the family altar, that it has this cleansing effect upon the family relationship. And even if your children, maybe you've had to discipline your children and they're on the outs with you for a while. And that could be taken care of. I remember one time particularly when my dad and I had a little rift about something. I don't even remember what it was, but it was one evening. And he said something I didn't like, and I talked back to him like I shouldn't have done. And so we just had a disagreement there. But I remember before we went to bed that night, we had a time of prayer, and that was all taken care of. And the next day it was gone. So there's a cleansing effect upon the family through the family altar. Then home is a memory factory. While your children at home, you're manufacturing memories every day. They're not going to carry all of those memories with them, but they're going to carry many of those memories with them. I remember hearing the story of a sailor in World War II. I don't remember where he was stationed, but somebody asked him the time of the day. And it was very obvious that the answer he gave was not the local time. And the man questioned him and said, "Oh, your clock is wrong. It must have stopped." And he said, No, it's running. Right on time." He said, "That's not the time here." And the sailor said, "Oh, I know it's not the time here, but it's the time that it is back home. I can always find out the time where I am, but I can't always tell what time it is back home unless I keep this watch on. And I know as I look at this watch and look at the hours of the day, I know what's going on back home through the routine of the family life. And I know what time Dad usually comes in from the field." Young man was a farm boy. "I know when Dad comes in from the field. I know when he begins the evening milking. I know when he gets the chores all done. I know what time they sit down to the table and eat, and everybody gathers around the table. And then I know what time it is when Dad gets the big old family Bible out and he reads the Bible and prays. said, that's what I want to remember. That's what I want to know, what's going on back home. Those were precious memories that that boy carried from home. And I suppose most of us have some precious memories that we carry from home. But there can be no memory more precious to us as believers than remembering those times when as a family we met together with the Lord and with one another around His Word. The family altar also draws the family closer emotionally. I believe there becomes an emotional closeness when the family reads the Bible together and prays together. By the way, that's why I don't encourage young folks who are just casually dating to have devotions, because you may, and I've known this to happen, where a couple dated a few times and they had devotions together and there became an emotional closeness and they got into a relationship that really wasn't what they wanted. This wasn't the person they wanted to marry. So it's all right to have a word of prayer, but for a couple that's really not settled upon their relationship, to spend a lot of time reading the Bible together and praying together may lead you into an emotional situation that you don't want to get into, because that may not be God's choice for you, for your mate, for life. And then it guarantees God's blessings upon you and your family. There's just something about this, that God puts His seal of approval upon a home, upon a marriage, where there is a regular family altar. During the years I've been here, I have counseled with a lot of people. And one question I usually ask couples is this: do you regularly have a time when you read the Bible together and when you pray together, when you have a family altar? And I can only remember one couple. I can't remember any more. There may have been more, but I can only remember one couple in all these years that told me that they were having trouble, but they were also having a family altar. Now, that doesn't mean that you won't have some troubles if you have a family altar, but it does say to me that folks who don't have a family altar are more apt to have trouble and difficulty. God will bless your family. God will bless your marriage in a very special way. And again, it's not how much time you give to it. It's not what you give to it. Of course, like everything else, the more we put into it, the more we're going to get out of it. But just to say, yes, that's going to become a part of our family life. That's going to become a part of our home, that we're going to have a family altar. There are a lot of excuses that we give for not having a family altar. I suppose the first one is we just don't have time. I mean, we're going so many different directions. We're doing so many things. We're all so involved, church and school, ball teams, community. We just don't have time. But that's a matter of priorities. We all have the same amount of time in every day, don't we? We all live the same amount of minutes every day. And if one family can do it, I believe it's possible for another family to do it. Now, this is not meant as a political endorsement, but Bob Inglis, when he was in Congress, told us one night when we were at his home, he said, I call my family every evening and I pray with my family over the telephone. There's a man in Washington, in Congress, busy, but he found time every day to call his family and to have family altar with his family, 500 miles away. I don't know if Ken had the opportunity to call his wife every night or not and have devotions from over in Kuwait. But time is something that we just have to make. And we find the time to do the things we want to do, don't we? Anything we want to do badly enough, we'll find the time to do it. Somehow we'll work it in. You say, oh, a lot of things I'd like to do. Well, it might be a lot of things you'd like to do, but if you really want to do it, I mean, you really are set on doing it, you will find the time to do it. And if we recognize how important this is and what a blessing it is, we can find the time to do it. So that's really not a legitimate excuse. Others say we don't know how. And as I said, just reading the Bible, reading some of the Psalms, reading out of the New Testament, maybe reading a devotional book along with it, You say, but maybe a husband says, well, again, I've never prayed before my wife. I've never prayed before anybody. You can open up to the Lord's Prayer and you can pray that together right off the pages of the Bible. So no one can say, I don't know how. That is too complicated. It is very simple. It's just a matter of doing it. Here's a big excuse. We've tried it before and didn't work. So how many times have you been on a diet? You still try again. Even if you have tried it and it didn't work. Maybe this time it will. It could. If you're dedicated enough to it, if you're determined enough to do it, if you're really sold on it, that this is something God would have you do, you can make it work. You can have it. You can make it happen. Somebody else says, well, nobody in our family is actually interested. Because we're so busy, because we go to Sunday school and we go to church and we go to young people's activities and our children are in a Christian school, I don't really see the need for it. I'm not interested in it. But again, there are things that we do because they're the right thing to do and we're not really interested in them. I'm never interested in going to the dentist, are you? I mean, I've never had a dental appointment and got up in the morning and rubbed my hand and said, oh boy, today I get to go to the dentist. No, I'm not interested in going to the dentist just for the joy of it, just for the fun of it, and neither are you. But you do it because it's the right thing to do. And so, whether there's interest or not, it still ought to be done because it is the right thing to do. And some families will say, well, we don't need it. But family's under attack today. Family's being redesigned by the courts, by the politicians. Every family needs help. Every home ought to be a place of safety. If we go back there to Deuteronomy chapter 22 and verse 8, it says, when thou buildest a new house, then thou shalt make a battlement for thy roof, that thou bring not blood upon thine house, if any man fall from thence. Eastern countries, a lot of living is done on the roof, at least it was in ancient days. Because the weather was so hot and the houses were made out of materials that once they got the heat, they didn't shed that heat at night. And so the family would be on the rooftop for the evening and many families would sleep on the rooftop. And the instruction here is you put a battlement up, you put a wall up about 3 or 4 feet so that if you do sleep on the roof at night, one of the children won't get up and walk off the roof and hurt themselves. Or if you have a visitor at your home and you're up on the roof maybe having the evening meal, that a visitor won't get up and wander off the roof. So you put a battlement around it. You provide protection so that the family, so that the home will be safe. And we need to provide safety for our homes. Our homes are in danger. Our families are in danger. God says, make a battlement. And the battlement of the family altar will bring safety to our homes. I'm not asking you to forsake everything, to go to a far-off mission field and invest your life there. Some of you perhaps are called to do that. That's what I'm asking you for tonight. I'm not asking you to yield all of your financial resources. Give it to the work of the Lord. I'm not asking you to do that. You may get an appeal for that one day, and you may have God speak to your heart about what you're giving to it. I'm only asking you to consider to give God and your family 5 or 10 minutes a day that you might have this family altar or this family worship. You say, what about the days we miss? Oh, there'll be some. You won't have it every day throughout all the years because schedules get disrupted. There are some days that you don't eat all your meals for one reason or another. There are some nights you don't sleep well. Maybe a member of the family is sick or maybe somebody's in the hospital. But you don't stop eating because you miss a meal now and then. And you don't stop sleeping because you miss a night's sleep now and then. You just pick it up the next day and go on. And so it is with the family altar. Yes, there will be some days that will be missed. But that ought to be the exception and not the rule. So all I'm asking you to consider tonight, 5 or 10 minutes of your time, of your family's time, to give God that time, that you can make your home a safer place, that you can know the blessing of God that God gives to those homes where He is acknowledged, so that your children will be more apt to make the right choices when they grow up, and go their own way. Undoubtedly, there are many homes here tonight where a family altar is a regular thing. In that respect, I've been preaching to the choir. But undoubtedly, there are many other homes represented here where the family altar is not a regular thing, where it doesn't take place, where it doesn't happen. I want to encourage you who do have the family altar, and I want to challenge you who don't have it, that you begin to make this a daily practice in your home and in your life.